What's up, everybody? Welcome back. It is MMA After Hours. Happy New Year. It's Michael Carlisle and Micah Frankel starting the new year off on a bad foot. Separate but together. Micah, how you doing, man?
Those damn awards were so good that I had to celebrate after it. No. Just a wild cold going around everywhere to start the new year, at least here locally. So want to keep you safe. The socially distance for the first show of the years. An homage to not so fond ways of how this show started.
So you're doing this to protect me and not, this isn't part of your New Year's resolution to stay away from me as much as you can.
No. And how did you hear me all the way over there about my resolution?
I see.
This is supposed to be secret.
Yeah, I'm always listening. Hey, let's jump in. Of course, UFC has been on their holiday break, but we still got lots of stuff going on. We had the big Bellator Ryzen showdown over the weekend. We got lots and lots of news to get to. Where you want to start at?
Oh, we're going to start right there. Bellator Ryzen. We'll actually start with the Ryzen 40 part of the card because my favorite moment of the night. Friend of the show, John Dodson, back at flyweight, back at 125, and just taking care of Hideo Tokoro. The knockout, the blitz of punches, the left hand lands perfect. A big knockout and a beautiful call out by Dodson afterwards in his press conference. He wants Koji Hataguchi. I don't know if that's able to happen because I believe Koji is technically a Bellator fighter, but his fight also there in Bellator Ryzen was at flyweight. So start off with John Dodson. I know you saw the highlight.
Dude, John looked as good as I've seen him look in a long, long time. Not that he went on a streak where he looked bad or anything, but I thought he looked really phenomenal and really dominated that. And certainly what was happy for him to see that performance. I thought he looked really good.
Something about being in a ring these last two fights, bare knuckle, Ryzen. Yeah. We've seen the aggressive Dodson outlanding that hand speed. Just when he gets going, you have to shell up or get grappling because he will light you up. It is great to see him back looking in peak condition once again. Then we get to what everybody was interested in, what everybody in America saw the following night. Real quick touch on that part. There was a lot of backlash towards Bellator. Do you think that Showtime should have bit the bullet and went live and then just again played a taped delayed version like they did at night?
Yes, I absolutely do. And look, in 2023, Micah, it makes no sense to have a taped delayed sporting event as your first showing of it. I get it, the time difference. Would it have affected Showtime negatively to have broadcast that live in the middle of the night or early in the morning as opposed to The Net or The Firm or whatever movies they were showing during that time? Probably not. I don't understand why you wouldn't do that, because as much as we all like to say, well, yeah, I'll catch it, I'll stay away from the spoilers, nobody stays away from the spoilers, you know, and once you find out what happened, unless there was just some crazy moment, your need to watch it goes away quite a bit. And yeah, if nothing else is going on and you remember, yeah, you might still check it out for a little while, but whether it's consciously or subconsciously, once you know what happened, your interest in watching it starts to wane. So I think it hurts quite a bit when you do your first run of it as a tape delay like that. You know, the Olympics are the only thing that still does that. And for the most part, somehow they're able to get away with it. But can you imagine an NBA game or an NFL game being shown on tape delay for the first time? So you're a Ravens fan. Who did the Ravens lose to this past week? I forget now. But
the Steelers.
The Steelers, thank you. Can you imagine if instead of showing that, they're like, you know what? We're going to show that Monday morning at 8 on the NFL Network. So if you weren't in the stadium and you'd like to see that game, this is the first chance you get to see it. Nobody's watching that, right? So why would anybody expect, oh, well, this Bellator versus Ryzen thing, it's a big deal. It happened 12 hours ago. I've read all about it. I've seen the results. I've read the recaps. I don't feel like I need to watch it now.
I'm just perplexed by the whole concept of it. I understand that there's some people defending Bellator saying, hey, it was 5 a.m. on the East Coast, it was 2 a.m. on the West Coast. And I'm like, guys, how snobby can you be as an American entity? Because globally, when you're putting on your events, there are people around the world watching them at the wee hours of the morning live. This isn't anything new. This is just new for us for this one event from your company when all year round there are people around the globe that do stay up to those wee hours to watch it. I just thought it was unlogical. Unless there was that much of a power play in Japan that you were not allowed to go
Could
live
be.
for some reason. And I guess for obviously promotion, symbionts, or you wouldn't want to share that knowledge, but it feels like a loss for Bellator for us to not get to watch what inevitably is their dominance.
No, I agree. And look, you can still have the replay in a more prime time, but I have a really hard time believing they drew more people with the first showing of that being tape delayed than they would have at 5 a.m. Eastern time. And I get it. Look, that's not a peak time. I do understand that, but it's a live sporting event. If the time is that big of a deal, then pull a UFC and do it at an odd hour over there, so it's a good hour here. I look, you and look, maybe you're right. Maybe there were some other things going on. Ryzen's like, just tape delay it. We don't want you to show it live. Whatever, whatever. I kind of doubt that was the case, but it could have been. But if it was just strictly, oh, nobody's going to watch at 5 a.m., we'll just tape delay it till a better time, then that's just piss poor on Showtime.
I mean, think about this. We've already cleared this hurdle previously with Ryzen, Bellator, and with Paramount. It was back, I think, when it was maybe still actually Paramount Network. Didn't we have a breakfast with Fedor fight once
Yep.
from Ryzen all the way from Japan? So you could have made this happen easily. They did it. And what we end up getting once we see it is nothing but, like I said, dominance from Bellator. They sent over their best, and for the majority of it all went to decision, but the Bellator fighters got the better of the Ryzen fighters. Bellator fighters went to Japan and literally punched the Ryzen fighters in their mouth, in their yard, in their ring, and took it all and brought it back. Not to mention, we saw that extra level of showmanship. The samurai, AJ McKee, the gladiator, Patricio Pitbull Frade, the Aztec warrior, Juan Archuleta. Forgot to mention that John Dodson earlier was a Ninja Turtle. But you got that showmanship that you only find in Ryzen. And how bad is it for Ryzen that they just got beat down?
It was not a good look for them, was it? They went, what, 0-5? Yeesh. Look, this is probably a good jumping off point for this part of the conversation. A lot's been made. Well, why doesn't UFC do stuff like this with Bellator or with Ryzen or whatever? A couple of reasons, I think. It's one thing when Bellator and Ryzen team up, or if PFL and Bellator were to team up. When you're number one, when you're the top dog, there's not a benefit. Well, God forbid you were to go 0-5, or hell, even 2-3. Look, would we like to see some of these matchups? Of course, we all would. But if you look at this from a business standpoint, while I think it does make sense for other promotions to do this, if you're UFC, there's nothing good that can come from doing a co-promotion with another company. If you win, you should have won, and any losses you have throw up little red flags in the minds of a lot of fans. Whereas if you're Bellator and Ryzen, yeah, Ryzen went 0-5, and we just talked about it's a bad look, and then we all move on about our day. If something like that happens with UFC and we'll just say PFL for the sake of argument, UFC and PFL get together, do a co-promotion, and let's say they do six fights. Hell, let's say it winds up 3-3. That's not a win for UFC. That's a loss. Hell, even if it goes 4-2 UFC, that's still a loss. So there's nothing to be gained other than maybe a tad bit of goodwill from the fans because if you did something with PFL, maybe that means you could do, you know, Nunez and Kayla Harrison or something like that. But I mean, otherwise, what would be the benefit if you're the top dog with working for a lesser promotion? And I don't mean that as a slap to any other promotion. But I mean, let's be real. If you're Dana White, if you're UFC, there's no benefit.
It's not like it's competitive. It's not like the PFL Bellator ratings and numbers are chasing down the UFC. It's not like the UFC is worried here or they truly feel that there's a competitor in that matter. If there was a possibility of leveraging this into something that they could use, it was something that they needed, but it would be kind of a reduction in innovation to go head to head with a promotion to follow in suit, to adhere to this call out. You're the UFC, you're bigger than Bellator, you're the trendsetter in this property, in MMA. We all watch the UFC, so you're not going to react to something like this or feel that you have to play the game, but it does. Now, I wonder if it opens up the question, do we get more talk between a PFL Bellator card, a ONE versus Bellator card? Do any of these kind of concepts pop up more than the UFC ever being involved in this conversation?
I think at the end of the day, business probably gets in the way, Micah. But if you are Bellator, if you are PFL, if you are ONE, and we'll throw Ryzen in there as well, if you could find a way to work together, do joint shows, maybe not even necessarily going head to head, but do a show where each company puts three fights on. Maybe at some point you lead to, well, now we can do some interpromotional stuff. Maybe we can crown global champions and try to build it that way and make yourself seem like by an association of all the other organizations that you could be as big or bigger than UFC. I mean, not that they would be, but maybe you could try to perpetuate that perception. I mean, maybe that makes sense. It can't be any worse than what any of them are doing now from a competing with UFC standpoint. Now, that also doesn't mean that Bellator is not successful in what they do, or ONE Championship isn't successful in what they do, or any of the other promotions. But if you're talking about perspective from the fans and, you know, it's UFC and it's everybody else, you probably, that's a losing battle probably. So, but if you could find a way to work together and seem unified and make yourselves by association seem bigger from that standpoint than you are, I mean, maybe there's something there. I don't necessarily think that's a bad idea.
It's not a bad idea for everybody else to work together. If you were to put the PFL champions against the Bellator champions, that's fun. Who knows what you could create with ONE Championship? They have so many different divisions, so many different styles of fighters, so many different guys that they're willing to throw around into different weight classes. There is an endless world of possibilities. But again, UFC probably way outside that realm without wanting to get involved. Specifically from this night, though, do you think that the win in the main event, AJ McKee beating the Ryzen champion Roberto de Souza, do you think that catapults AJ McKee into being the number one contender in Bellator? He was even called the MVP of the team by Scott Croker.
Yeah, it probably does. Let me ask you this, though, and maybe this doesn't matter. Maybe I'm looking at this wrong. Does it elevate AJ McKee outside of Bellator? Does it make fans look at him any different because he beat the Ryzen guy? Which kind of gets back to the whole, how good of an idea is this and why doesn't UFC do things like that? I mean, because if it doesn't make a difference here, it's damn sure not going to benefit UFC if they were doing something like this with another company, right?
Right. And now you look at the detriment side. If we're to look at this from the Ryzen side, you just had your lightweight champion effectively lose to the second or third best lightweight in Bellator, you had your featherweight champion go head to head with their featherweight champion, and you came up with it on the short side. So now we can see what everyone's fear would be. Now you look like Ryzen, where your world champion is obviously considered less than world champion status.
And not just, you know, losing to the Bellator champ, like you said, losing to the number two or number three contender in Bellator. So, you know, for a lot of fans, you look at that, well, at best, the Ryzen guy can't be any better than the third, fourth, fifth best Bellator guy. And if he's only as good as the fourth, fifth best Bellator guy, how good is he compared to the one championship champ? And let's, I mean, the UFC champ, hell, he can't even be in the top 10 there. And look, certainly that's a flawed logic, but that's the way a lot of people would look at it.
It's a flawed logic, but it's hard to argue with. We respond yeah. to what we see, and we're going to see that right away. It's a glaring issue with this system. You would always want it to be 2-2 and come down to that final match and end up being 3-2 or even have them all be these epic fights that people are talking about. But again, it's just Ryzen isn't Pride. It hasn't grabbed the fans in that same way. Well, the New Year's event is still an incredible, spectacular.
Yeah.
They haven't captivated the global audience in the same way. And now you end up with remembering that you got spanked by Bellator.
Look, all that being said, you just nailed it. It's still a spectacle. It's still a big event. I wouldn't want to see it go away. I just wonder at times how much of a benefit there is to it. And I do think that it's for Bellator and Ryzen, it makes sense. But for anybody who says, well, UFC should do that, the playing field is different. It just doesn't, I don't think for them it would make sense. But, you know, even with, you know, what we just talked about with Ryzen and, well, how does that make their champ look and all that, I still think it's a worthwhile event for Bellator and Ryzen to do. And as long as they can find common ground and continue to do this and they feel it's worthwhile to them, but I don't for a second think it should go away. I just understand why other organizations maybe aren't as interested in doing it as some of the others are.
I've seen where it's some of these other promotions, KSW, Road FC, mm-hmm. Ryzen, they will work with one. They will work with other promotions. We've seen Bellator send guys over. I wonder if this dominance, if it's not going to so much break the relationship between the two promotions, but I wonder if it may halt everything. Yeah, let's do team versus team again instead of more just let's send one or two guys over. It's a Bellator versus Ryzen fight or a Ryzen versus one fight, but do we really got to make a team versus team and have it so pivotal to both promotions where one gets to walk away with the dominant? I wonder if we see that thing where we work together, but it goes back to New Year's of past on a smaller scale instead of the team head to head kind of scenario.
See, that's why I like the idea of working together and doing cards where three promotions bring three fights each or whatever. You could still, if you wanted to, at some point lead to interpromotional matches. But I think part of the downside to what they're doing now is what we just talked about. Ryzen goes 0-5. Wow, Ryzen, they're really second rate to Bellator. And maybe that's the case. Maybe it isn't. But if you do four cards a year where each company's putting three fights on and you introduce an audience who's not familiar with Ryzen fighters and you see what those guys can do, then if you decide to do something interpromotional, maybe you fall into the category more of, well, wow, that just shows on any night, anybody can beat anybody. The fight game's a crazy game, one kick, one punch. Whereas when you see it just once a year, and for a lot of people, that's the only exposure to Ryzen you may get, then you just assume, well, see, there you go. But Bellator, solidly the number two company in the world. Look how they just went 5-0 against Ryzen. And maybe that is the case. But again, part of that could be, well, sometimes shit just happens. And if you've been exposed to four cards already where you've seen some of these Ryzen fighters, and then the fifth card, your big end of the year card, is interpromotional. Maybe when you go 0-5 or you go 2-3 or whatever, it is looked upon more as, well, sometimes stuff just happens.
I don't know if we're going to see that much symbiotes. It feels like a lot of people relying on each other to try to build each other up. Make the product look a bit more prominent than where it truly is at.
And look, that's the other thing, as cool as this is, and we can move on from this, but Bellator is the big winner, right? That they went 5-0. They showed their supreme dominance over Ryzen, solidifying themselves. Well, maybe one's got an argument, but solidifying themselves as the number two promotion in the world, right? Did Bellator really benefit? Does anybody? And again, I'm not crapping on the event. I like it, but Bellator goes 5-0. Do people look at Bellator any differently, or is it more people look at Ryzen differently because they went 0-5?
Well, that's the difference, because who are the people? Yeah. Who are the people? Because we're talking about the people in the American viewing audience. This probably doesn't change anything, because they've already tried to buy into the narrative that Bellator is number two. Now, here is where we are lacking in our thinking, and we have to open up that. And I'm not going to get all into the third line and become all mystical. It's just get into the global mind of thinking. Now Japan, now one of the biggest, most prominent traditional MMA markets on the planet, has an audience towards Bellator. That's what this was about. It was more about a global expansion. That's again why I didn't understand why they didn't go live, because you're doing this for the global market, Showtime. This wasn't about the American market. This is about why we keep seeing Bellator return to Ireland when no one else is doing it, and just trying to build that fan base so that they have that same connection. Because the UFC, you say MMA, most general fans are like, oh, does that guy do UFC? Do you talk about UFC? Well, yeah, we talk about UFC because it's MMA. The general audience doesn't know what MMA is. Bellator is having to fight to get their name known, and any global way they can do it, they are doing it.
Yeah, it's just like, do you ask for a tissue or do you ask for a Kleenex? Kleenex is the name of a tissue, but when people think of tissues, they think Kleenex. Pro wrestling, fair or not, like it or not, when you say pro wrestling, people think WWE. I understand what you're saying. And look, you're right. This was more for the global audience. I wish you could find a happy medium where you could service that global audience, grow that global audience, and not almost turn off your American audience, your home base audience, because for whatever reason, whether it was a Bellator call, a Showtime call, or whatever, or an agreement to do this joint card, you don't show it live back here, even if it is 5 o'clock in the morning. You show it on tape delay, because again, the tape delay is so antiquated. I get it. And you're right. Done more for the global audience, but I feel like you kind of alienated your core audience in the process.
Bellator is kind of like that power hitting team that can never bring a runner home. They hit the single shot home runs, but when runners are on base, they just can't do anything, because it seems like Bellator is usually able to make one good point throughout what they do. And then we're able to magnify, oh, there's two or three other things they could have hit on, but they were so singularly focused on one objective. They were successful in that objective, but they've missed how they could have utilized it for so many more ways.
Micah, in addition to the Bellator v. Ryzen over the weekend, we also had Fury Grappling. And some interesting things going down there.
Right. We see the former women's strawweight champion get, I believe it's called throat cuddled, as Jillian Robertson calls it, the all-time leader in submission wins in the women's flyweight division. The redheaded Fury quickly got the back, and in under 2 minutes, submits the former champion. Quite an impressive showing. When you don't have the gloves on, the grappling is just that much faster, that much more tenacious. Not to mention, we saw some sizzle, as you saw Chase Hooper get the calf slicer on the singlet wearing Clay Guida. Some of the pros really shine out there. Plenty UFC vets on the mat. The Fury Pro grappling, definitely one of the gems there on UFC Fight Pass.
How about Chase Hooper, man? And look, I get it. It's grappling. It is what it is. And look, for that matter, how about Jillian Robertson? But I really expected Clay Guida to make easy work of Chase Hooper. Good for Chase Hooper. I thought he looked really good.
I thought the size and strength advantage would have a lot more to play in, yeah. Not to mention just all that experience, but putting Hooper in his natural habitat on the mat without the punches flying at his face, and you saw how lethally technical he is.
Yeah. And now as far as Robertson submitting Nama Yunus, does that do anything for her as far as MMA?
No, I don't think it does anything for her in MMA. I think it honestly just does more to perpetuate the narrative that people are wondering where Rose's mental acuity is. Also, maybe this does do something for Robertson, saying it gives her the needed confidence to try that cut to 115, as I don't think she's one of the bigger 125ers on the roster. Those might be the couple implications I could see coming out from it. But again, it's grappling. It's not MMA. On a given day, your top UFC fighter's probably getting tapped out on the mat like crazy anyway. It's practice. It happens.
Yeah. Look, it is what it is. That being said, I actually enjoy it. I've been fortunate enough to attend a couple of these. Is it the same as going to UFC? No. But is it fun? Is it entertaining? It sure is. And I thought that this overall was a pretty good card as well. Those two matches especially stood out. I enjoyed it. But yeah, at the end of the day, it is what it is.
Hey, it's grappling. It's fun. Chael Sonnen Submission Underground, EDI, Fury Pro, ADC. There's so many of them going on right now. You even see ONE Championship with their grappling world title matches. Grappling can be a fun spectator sport. Believe me, they're having fun doing it.
For sure, for sure. What else is going on in the MMA world? I know you got a lot of news and notes.
Well, actually, I wanted to step outside of the MMA world for the little bit of news from the fists, the bare knuckle world. Bare Knuckle FC, their big event for the year is Knuckle Mania. Knuckle Mania 3 this year is going to be February 17th, taking place where we are located in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Your main event, light heavyweight and cruiserweight champion Lorenzo Hunt will be unifying the light heavyweight title when he takes on interim champion Bellator vet Mike DeMarine Richmond. So far, that fight is the only one officially announced by the promotion. We do know that there's a possibility of Austin Trout versus Diego Sanchez, but that one is requiring some more medical testing before the commission will approve it. And a guy that I think I've brought on the show before, St. Nick Gonzalez from United Fit, he has announced he has signed a one-fight deal. He will be competing. His last professional fight will be his first bare-knuckle fight.
I hope this works out for them. I really do. But at one point in time, Paige Van Zandt was supposed to be on this card. Doesn't appear that's happening. You mentioned Austin Trout versus Diego Sanchez. That was supposed to be on this card, and maybe it still is. But like you said, there's some issues with the commission and some medicals, i.e. everybody wants to make sure Diego's okay. But before they put him out there, this is either going to turn out to be really, really good, or it's going to be an absolute cluster.
It's their second time for bare knuckle fighting championships to be coming here to the Duke City, and they're stepping it up. We were at the Rio Rancho Event Center the first time coming through. This time they're going to the bigger venue here in town, Tingley Coliseum. It's a gamble. It's a gamble, but they're moving it closer to where everybody can drive to. Yeah. We'll see how this pans out. And like last time, I'm expecting a lot of fighters to be hitting me up here shortly to be telling me who's on the card. You're figuring a slew of locals. And not to mention, with it being Knuckle Mania, I'm expecting that Sanchez-Trout bout to come to fruition. And you would expect at least one more large star, I would think, on the card. Heck, John Dodson, as we mentioned earlier from the Rising card, a first round knockout in a minute. He won it in a minute in his bare knuckle debut. Maybe he could turn it around, be ready for that card here in what would be about 6 weeks.
Hey, real
interesting
quick,
to see bare knuckle.
For sure, for sure. Real quick, while we're talking about non-MMA stuff, something else that came out of the Ryzen Bellator event over in Japan over the weekend, and I know you're pumped for this, Micah. I know you are. Manny Pacquiao announces he has signed a deal with Ryzen. It will be for boxing. It's a one-fight deal, but Pacquiao says it'll be more than one.
Pacquiao says it'll be more than one. We've seen Floyd have his time working with Ryzen. Could this lead to the Floyd-Pacquiao rematch that nobody has ever wanted to see? Well, maybe the audience in Japan wants to see it up close and personal, and hey, they may get that opportunity. Or maybe, maybe this is their way to say that the relationship with Floyd is over in Ryzen. He was their headliner the last two New Year's events, so maybe they've moved him aside and they are bringing in Manny Pacquiao, and we can already be in anticipation that he will headline a big card maybe in the summer or maybe all the way next New Year's.
I was really hoping, Micah, in 2023, we'd be getting away from old boxers grabbing one more payday, YouTubers and former MMA guys, YouTubers and former boxers, NBA guys and YouTuber, all that stuff. And I get it. Look, it sounds like, and it sounds like this will not be an exhibition for Pacquiao, that it'll be an actual real fight. We'll see how that plays out, but maybe it's not fair. Maybe we should wait and see how it plays out. But my first reaction was kind of lumping this Pacquiao signing in with Paul Brothers, in with Nate Robinson fighting, you know, former NFL running backs boxing and things like that. I hope that's not the case, but this one really didn't excite me, I'll be honest.
Neither did Manny Pacquiao's last pay-per-view on Fight TV there from the Philippines. So I don't know about this one. We were talking about the weird and the odd. So I guess this is the moment, because you did bring up YouTube stars. I'm just going to ask you it real quick. I don't want to get into it. Donald Cerrone said he'd be down. Do you have any bone in your body that wants to see Cowboy Cerrone versus Jake Paul?
I'd love for Cerrone to get a $1 million payday, or whatever you get for fighting a Paul brother these days. Do I have any interest in it? No more or less interest than I have in seeing a Paul brother box anybody else. I do like that Cerrone takes a different tact rather than talking shit and calling out. He's like, hey, I respect what he's doing, and I'm not going to call anybody out, but you want to fight? I'd fight you.
As long as the drug testing isn't happening, I'm down to see that one.
Cerrone looks like Conor McGregor these days. That's all. Yeah, he is big. He is huge.
And he ain't hiding what he's doing. He said he's on the fuel, baby.
Bellator doesn't really test, right? Serious question. Let's say Cerrone got the itch. Let's set aside bulked up physiques and all that. Wouldn't the call, him or anybody else, we'll just use him since that was who you brought up, that's who we're talking about here. Isn't the call to fight a Paul brother like that? And I realized I just kind of shit on that a minute ago, but isn't that the call? Go get a big payday rather than signing a one fight or a multi-fight deal with a secondary MMA promotion, and the two fights you have, the three fights you have combined, you aren't going to make what you're going to make for one fight against Logan or Jake Paul.
That's why, no matter how crazy you may thought it was, when Kamaru Usman was on his freaking horse, just getting after Canelo Alvarez, and Alvarez is like, who's this guy? Usman knew that if he fought that guy, he was never having a fight again if he was able to get Canelo to actually bite on that carrot. So you can't hate the player, hate the game.
There you go. Hate the game.
Now we got some other news and stuff. I'm going to start off with some UFC announcements. We do have a new signing, one that seems to be making some big waves. He is a former Cage Warriors champion. Christian Leroy Duncan is heading to the UFC, 7-0, 6 wins by finish. He did have a 17-6 amateur run. Here's another little hot juicy one that we're going to stop to talk about. Demir Ismagulov. Yes, we just saw him recently, UFC Fight Night co-main event. He has announced due to health issues, he is having to leave the sport and is retiring from MMA. Ooh. How surprising has that been of news?
That is surprising and certainly sad, unfortunate news.
This is crazy. We saw him fighting Armin Tsarukyan,
yeah,
and his wrestling was not there. You're wondering if something was up. I hope everything long-term is well for him. Not many reports fully about this. It was a sudden announcement. His management team said they weren't even fully sure about what was going on. So it's a developing story, but does seem to be official from everything we're hearing. On some lighter notes, we got some fight announcements. January 14th, UFC Fight Night, that is UFC Vegas 67, has lost Omar Morales, and now Matthews Reblick will be facing Nick Fury. That one is at lightweight. Shane Young versus Blake Builder has been added to the UFC 284 event in Australia on February 11th. That one is at featherweight. Billy Goff is out. AJ Fletcher steps in to face Thumba Gorbino at the UFC Fight Night on February 18th. Derek Brunson, Dacris Duplessis, is official for UFC 285 on March 4th. I think we had talked about that one, that it was rumored, and now yeah, all ink is dry. Rafael Assuncao, Kyler Phillips, UFC Fight Night on March 11th. Those are bantamweights. I've seen conflicting reports. Sean Brady, Michelle Pajada, UFC Fight Night, San Antonio, March 25th, welterweight bout. They are top 15 ranked fighters. I've seen this is the main event, and I've just seen it's on the card. I suspect it's going to be the main event, but we don't have that one officially confirmed yet. From the UFC, Rob Font, Adrian Yanez, that bantamweight banger is in the works for the UFC's April 8th event. Specifically, anything stick out to you right there? I know those last four are all big fights.
None of those stick out per se more than the other. What does stick out is what you didn't mention. It's a new year. It's 2023. Big new things on the horizon. We're just a few short weeks away from the TBS debut of the Power Slab League, and not one goddamn bit of news on the Power Slap League. What is wrong with you, Micah?
Somebody's going to have to slap me on that one.
I already know the answer, but for the sake of the show, I'm going to ask. Do you have any interest in this at all whatsoever?
No, I just can't do it. The videos on Facebook, when I first started to see what was going on, it was captivating as a spectacle, but I don't think I could buy into it. And then to see the commercials, the launch point for the show that's supposed to get you intrigued, to see that it's just the relaunching of The Ultimate Fighter, a series that I was kind of already long in the tooth of, I don't know how Power Slap League is going to connect with me. And I'm hesitant to say that it's going to connect with masses. Do I believe there will be a niche audience that's going to enjoy this? I do believe so, but I feel this is a little bit further out there. We wonder what was coming after Bare Knuckle. Now it's just No Defense. Not something that I'm going to be watching.
It doesn't appeal to me either. We were talking before the show started, and I said something to the effect, it's either going to be huge or it's going to be an absolute flop. It could be somewhere in the middle. I think what you might, at least early on, get a lot of interest from is the TikTok universe. Now, where they might lose that is, like you said, doing this in almost an Ultimate Fighter format. If you're talking just slap fighting matches, I guess. That seems something that would be right up the alley of people who spend an inordinate amount of time watching TikTok videos all day. And I'll admit, sometimes I do my fair share of that. I could see there being some interest there, but again, there's a reason people watch TikTok videos all day. They're short. I don't know, investing an hour or ever how long that these shows are every week, you might start to lose people in a hurry. You know, people who are checking it out, people who have seen highlights of dudes just standing there slapping each other and all that. Look, I don't want anybody to fail. I certainly hope it's successful. More power to them. I got some doubts, man. Again, maybe I'm wrong on that. I just don't, again, it's either going to be huge or nobody's going to care and it's going to quietly go away after a season.
Now, because we attend UFC events and, you know, we are media, we get press releases and we've seen the bios for the coaches and for the athletes that are going to be part of the show. It's amazing to see that some of them, the depths of where this sport was before, that people, I'm a this league champion, a that league champion. So there has been an underground swelling, it seems, for these events. And maybe this is the time and the vehicle that is bringing it or attempting to bring it is where we're at. Again, I just don't see the investing the time in the stories. If this was a 20-minute ordeal, 30-minute thing where you just had the action, I think it might do better than trying to go back down the same path that the Ultimate Fighter, that the Contender before it did. Yeah. And we've seen that model have success and not have success. I think there was Fight Girls back in the day. So I don't know if society is in the same mode of caring about reality TV that we were before, where you hit it. We want that short, satisfying knowledge of the beginning and the end result quickly.
I understand the idea of wanting to get the fans to know these. We call them fighters or slappers. Whatever, we'll just call them fighters. So I get why they're doing the format they're doing. I'm curious if they wouldn't be better served, though, in a roundabout way. You kind of just touched on this. Rather than doing it like this, every week it's a half-hour show, an hour show, whatever, but it emanates from a bar in Vegas. And you've got the setup, you've got the slap table, and you just run guys out there, strap them in, and they slap each other silly. That one's over. All right, let's interview this person. Now it's on to the next one. And it's more of a boom, 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 these guys slapping the shit out of each other, rather than something which seems like has the ability to get really contrived and drawn out and lack action at times with the format that they're doing. Again, maybe doing it in a bar live or live to tape for playback later, maybe that's not quite ideal either, but it seems like doing something like that and having more action and less backstory might actually be better for something like this than what they're actually doing.
All right, transition. We're going to be taking this conversation, and I'm going to turn it in a whole different direction than you ever thought we were going to go.
Uh-oh.
Why do we have Power Slap League?
I have no idea.
I know why we have Power Slap League. Because, well, obviously the UFC, Zuffa, the entity, they are enterprising. They are innovating. And Dana White always wants to be on the forefront of combat sports. Well, bare knuckle boxing has a lot of prominent entities here in America already making waves and already doing that by recycling UFC fighters anyway. So that's not the business to get into. But Power Slap is something different because of the failures of Zuffa Boxing to ever be able to launch because of really the Ollie Act. Dana White wanted to have that much control, which brings me up to, did you hear that there's a congressman who is pretty hell-bent on using his term to successfully get the Ollie Act into MMA. Mm-hmm. A story that was undercover, but may become much more prevalent as the year goes on.
Yeah, and that's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. You brought up something else interesting, and I can't believe we're still talking about this. I only brought it up just to push your buttons a little bit, and here we are actually having a somewhat thoughtful discussion on Power Slap. But you brought up not doing bare knuckle and recycling former UFC fighters, to me, that seems like a more solid business plan. If you're hell-bent on doing the power slap, I'm actually very surprised you don't see UFC veterans in this. So whether they're veterans at the tail end of their career or guys who have recently stepped away, like a Donald Cerrone, guys and gals who have recently retired, if you're Dana White, if you're Zuffa, if you really wanted to get this off the ground, I'm surprised you haven't brought in a couple of ex-UFC guys, some name recognition to get fans interested in this. And no disrespect to any of these slappers, any of the fighters that are on this season. I don't know any of them. And at least up till now in the promos and commercials and whatnot, they've given me no reason to care. If you had a couple of former UFC fighters in here, for better or for worse, you have a reason to care. Whether it's, hey, I want to see this guy get the shit slapped out of him, or I want to see him slap the shit out of somebody. That would seem like a more solid business plan. I'm surprised they didn't do that.
I can understand it from the fighter's perspective, not wanting to. And you even pitched your first idea, what was the better idea, to just do this in the bar. I don't know if I see the UFC fighters, the vets, just with all of their endless tools in the box to be like, yeah, I want to be a slapper. Or maybe you just want to look at it from the financial end, and let's just say it. Your biggest way to make profit as the company is to minimize your costs in every area. To bring in these UFC vets that were getting X amount of dollars and working for the same company, you're probably starting off on the basis of that same pay. I'm not sure what we're paying for a slap match, what even the grand prize is for the winner of this reality show, besides the beautiful slap belt. It would lead me to say that keeping costs down is also by bringing out the unheralded star, because again, this was a bar sport. You can't believe the pots were that big. So by increasing the pots a small amount, I wouldn't be surprised if we're still under UFC numbers in some area.
Maybe. And look, you're right. It probably comes down to dollars and cents. Hell, everything does. And maybe I'm looking at this a little wrong. I envision it as something as, under my proposal, something that's really like a really lighthearted grappling event. Bunch of guys hanging out. Hey, we'll get together. We'll have some drinks. We'll shoot the shit. We'll tell stories. And then we'll slap each other. So it's almost, in a weird way, like a night out with the boys. Now, look, I don't have nights out with the boys where it ends with everybody slapping each other until somebody's got a concussion, but something like that, and then incorporating some former UFC guys, I could see. And then maybe you build it from there. I get trying to save money, not bringing in guys who are going to want actual money, but unless you've got some sort of guarantee from Turner that there'll be a second season, there might not be a second season. So you can save money and all that, but if you want this to be successful and continue, you maybe should have spent a little money at the outset to help ensure there would be enough interest for a second season, and then start drifting off in another direction.
I just can't. Also, here would be the problem with getting more. I'm sure some of these competitors already have an MMA background, but the slap fight might break down into a fight in the house, and you might want to kind of limit those. I don't know. And there's just the difference to me getting on the mat, rolling around with some friends. Oh, you caught me in a choke on tap, tap, tap. These grappling matches. You saw Guida, good sportsmanship towards Hooper, as we mentioned earlier at the Fury Pro. There's a difference of that to slapping the person to a state of falling towards the earth, plummeting unconsciously, hoping the two protectors behind you are fast enough to catch you. This is brain-changing shit. This is pretty violent also.
Fair enough. Fair enough. All right, we spent way more time than I ever thought we would spend talking about Power Slap. Micah, I'm going to throw you a solid right now. Move on. Take us somewhere else.
Okay, real quick, let's get to Bellator. We got Bellator and LFA news still, people. Bellator has signed Sarah McMahon to the women's featherweight division. Does this automatically mean we need McMahon versus Ngannou or McMahon versus Cyborg? What do you think of the signing?
It is what it is. I think it's a solid signing for Bellator. And yes, I think if Ngannou is willing to fight Cyborg, then maybe you do a McMahon Ngannou winner gets Cyborg. If she's not, then you just go ahead and book Cyborg and McMahon and go from there. Does the signing excite me? Probably not, but I don't think it's a bad signing either. And look, if you want Cyborg back, and it sounds like they do, you got to have somebody worthwhile for her to fight. And other than Ngannou, there's no one on that roster that's overly appealing to the fans or probably to Cyborg. So going out and signing Sarah McMahon from that standpoint, I think does make sense.
Sarah McMahon has fought once in 2022, a win over Kyle Rosa. Good performance. Lost before that to Juliana Pena. She's only fighting once a year. She had an active 2019. So pre-pandemic, we had a Sarah McMahon who had rebounded, found herself again in grappling after back-to-back losses. You didn't know if it was the end of the road for her. Going up in weight is probably going to be helpful at her age. If you're Bellator, probably you did overpay in the UFC eyes. You offered much more than UFC was going to do. Congratulations to Sarah McMahon. It's all good for you. You got paid. You said it was an overwhelming amount. I just, depends how long the deal is. Maybe there's three good fights for her in Bellator. And you question, will this be a commercial or attendance draw? Does Sarah McMahon pull more eyes to Showtime the nights she fights? Does she put more butts in the seats? Or was this all dependent on the fact that we have Ngannou, we have Cyborg? Ngannou will not fight Cyborg because she believes that Cyborg is on something that would come up in certain testing, and the testing has been a hangup. So you can have McMahon now fight both of them, and maybe that's what you're looking at. Her price was worth the price of being able to put each one of those athletes in a main event. You're not worth it, but you plus you is worth it.
I think you nailed it. Sarah McMahon fighting Jane Doe does not move the needle at all. And no disrespect to anybody there. But like you just said, if it gets you an interesting fight with Kat Zanganu, if it gets Chris Cyborg back in a Bellator cage, then yeah, I do think it's worth it. So I get why they did the signing. And from that standpoint, I think it makes a lot of sense. And look, God forbid, Sarah McMahon goes out and beats Kat Zanganu, challenges Cyborg. Cyborg comes out and beats her. Help. Then maybe all of a sudden you do have something there with Sarah McMahon. But if not, you should get at least a fight against one of those ladies, if not both, depending on how it plays out. So from that standpoint, yeah, I do think it makes sense.
Also in Bellator news, I knew it was too good to be true that Vadim Nemkov could fight on their last show, turn around and fight on the first one of the new year. Yeah, Nemkov injured, not fighting Yoel Romero immediately. Johnny Eblen defending his middleweight title against Fedor protege Anatoly Tolkov is now your co-main event as Bellator debuts on CBS. Does this move the needle for you? Do you feel like this was an adequate replacement? Does this feel like a grab for Bellator to say, hey, we're still having two title fights? Or is it a wise move to possibly put the most eyes they've ever had on Johnny Eblen, a young unbeaten fighter who, will remind you, just dethroned the great Gegard Mousasi?
Oh, no, I think it's a great move, and it's probably a better fight than what you had there as your co-main originally. Plus, and I like Yoel Romero a lot. I'm surprised he's not the one who had to pull out of that fight. And I think going up till the time when they stepped in the cage, you'd have to be wondering in the back of your mind, Is this fight going to actually happen? Now, look, something could happen in training with Eblen for sure. Look, wild things happen, but I feel a lot more comfortable about this fight actually happening than I would have the original co-main event.
Now we're going to take you to the LFA news, remind you guys, and I have an LFA preview in just a moment, because yes, the first MMA event of the year, well, at least that I'm watching on UFC Fight Pass, we do have LFA. Going to be a big year for LFA and Fury Fighting Championships. LFA has announced right so far, 113, that is January 13th, Mystic Lake Casino, Lake Poyer, Minnesota. LFA 150, seven-time Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu World Champion. Ari Freitas is going to be taking on Wonder Boy protege John Sweeney in that main event. And then on January 28th, the promotion heads back to South America, Sao Paulo, Brazil, for LFA 151 Featherweight Tournament Finals. As you're going to see, the heavy-handed Jose Delano against the unbeaten upstart Gabriel Santos. And your co-main event will see a vacant women's strawweight fight between Brazil and Argentina's top female prospects. That's your LFA news. And this week, like I said, we kick off the year with LFA on UFC Fight Pass. They are in Arizona, Gila River Arena. You're going to see a Chandler, Arizona, Gila River Casino. It's LFA 149. Your main event is a vacant flyweight title fight. Brazil's Felipe Boons is taking on UFC vet Japan's Yuma Horiuchi. In the co-main event, you have intriguing heavyweight prospect Ben Tayan taking on Brazil's Henrique Silva. Flyweight unbeaten fighter to keep an eye on, Anho, also on that main event, main card. Yeah.
Also, real quick, as we wrap up the news, because I know somebody wants to know the answer. Wednesday, January 11th, 10 p.m. TBS for Power Slap. There you go.
Saturday night, if you can't get enough MMA, Phil, from around the world. Yes, you do have Muradov Professional Fight League 7. Not sure which country that one's coming from.
A foreign one.
Yeah, really far away.
Micah, last week we did our year-end awards and all that good stuff. I can only assume that means this week, as we hit 2023, we've got a, maybe not predictions per se, but what we want to see, breakout fighters, all that. We have to go through the motions and do this, right?
There's some things to go through the motions. Well, first thing, and one that everyone is talking about that I wanted to bounce off you is, what fights intrigue you most that you want to see in 2023?
Maybe not a specific fight. There is one thing I want to see, though. Beneil Dariush needs to fight some goddamn body for the lightweight title. Whoever the champ might be, Dariush has been denied for too long. He keeps getting passed over. I get it. I'm also not going to hold my breath waiting for it to happen in 2023. But in the name of all that's fair and just in the world, somebody give Beneil Dariush a freaking title shot already.
You know, that was actually number 5 on my list.
Was it really?
The top four that I have besides that, I'd like to see Khamzat Chimaev versus Paulo Costa. I just kind of want to see a resolution to that scuttlebutt. The man wore a t-shirt calling out Khamzat. Yeah. Khamzat says nobody wants to fight. Bilal Muhammad wants to fight. Bilal Muhammad wants Khamzat Chimaev. I want to see that fight. Either way, Chimaev says nobody wants to fight him. I got a pair of guys that I think really want to fight him. Hell, I think Whitaker can beat Pajeda. I want to see that one. I think it could happen. I mean, this indomitable force, but is his grappling really that good? Whitaker's much more seasoned. There's just something about that matchup.
Let me ask you this real quick on that subject. I agree with you. I think Whitaker can beat him. Is it time we stop shortchanging Alex Pajeda and recognize that while still young in the MMA game, he's pretty damn good? Because while I agree with you, you see his quick rise. Would it be a shock if he were to fight Whitaker and beat him? I kind of don't think so, but along your line of thinking, and I'm in a complete agreement, I kind of expect him, his first title defense, he loses. And again,
just like maybe, that on Asanya.
Yeah, exactly. But maybe that's shortchanging him, and maybe shame on me, shame on us for continuing to do that. But I just, yeah, I think it's going to be a really short title reign for him.
Big power, both hands. You can see it. We just don't know about the grappling. The fine aspects of his techniques of being on the mat, those question marks are going to leave us questioning Pajeda until they're answered. Another one, and I can't believe you said there wasn't one that you wanted to see. Because damn it, don't we want to see John Jones versus Francis Ngannou?
I just assume we're getting that. But maybe, again, maybe shame on me for a second time for assuming. Assuming that's not a done deal, it just hasn't been officially announced yet. Yes, that will be at the top of the list, no doubt about it. I'll tell you one fight I don't want to see, and I think it's very close to being a done deal. I don't want to see Leon Edwards and Jorge Masvidal.
It feels like the Kamaru Usman hand injury may force that fight to happen. Not many of us want to see it, but if you took the temperature in the UK and if it's boiling still, that they need a resolution to the three-piece and a soda, a two-piece and a biscuit, whatever was being handed out from the chicken shack that night, I guess we can do it. Not looking forward to it. Like you said, it may happen. Here's the dark horse. Here's an outside thought I had for you. I wanted to bounce off you.
Okay.
What about Shavkat Rakhmonov versus Colby Covington?
I'm good with that. That's part of my problem with Masvidal Edwards, though. Masvidal should not fight until Colby Covington is able to fight. In any other sport,
that's a good point.
If you attack a competitor outside of a restaurant, you don't get rewarded by getting to fight while the other guy's still on the shelf. I would personally like to see Covington Edwards. And again, I don't know what Covington's status is. Covington may not want that fight. He may not physically be ready for that fight. I don't know. But I don't think Masvidal should be rewarded. Now, as to your question with Covington and Rakhmonov, I want to see Colby Covington back. I'd prefer to see him take on Leon Edwards in London. If that's not the case, though, I think just getting Covington back. The other thing with the Masvidal Edwards, what the fuck has Jorge Masvidal done to deserve a title shot? Not a damn thing. But whatever, I get it. Names make fights. I understand he's still a draw. I guess we could say every time Conor fights for a title, what's Conor done lately to deserve a title shot, right? So I get it. It's fine. But Colby Covington needs to get back in the octagon before Jorge Masvidal is allowed back in.
Well, think about it. Dan Henderson got a world title shot at middleweight. Sure. Chael Sonnen fought for the light heavyweight title. The UFC has thrown some kooky things out there, and we've just accepted them. Masvidal, the BMF champion, the story, the intrigue, that's fully what they're betting this on, instead of saying, oh, we're doing Khamzat Chimaev, who just missed weight, or Gilbert Burns, who's coming off of a loss to Khamzat Chimaev. Are you really throwing those guys in the main event? I guess they're just trying to rely on the story to save a pay-per-view that they've already committed to doing in the UK that this hand injury has unfortunately blown up. But let me get to the Bellator of this conversation. Number one on the list, it has to be there. We have to want to see Nurmagomedov versus McKee, the lightweight title fight. I asked you earlier if he became the number one contender. I feel like hands down, most desirable fight that Bellator has not already said they are flat out making would be that lightweight title match.
I'd agree with you on that. And look, Scott Coker went out of his way to praise McKee, called him the MVP of that 5-0 route of Ryzen. I think that's where we're headed. And I think it will be a disappointment if we don't get that.
Now, I also wondered if we could see some rematches this year. And unfortunately, it's me and I went overboard. I got like 7 non-Conor McGregor rematches that would be desirable possibilities for 2023, because you and me have already talked about ad nauseum that Conor can fight you, he can fight me, he can pick up a bum on the corner on the way to the arena, and millions of people are tuning in, so it really doesn't matter who he fights. So what rematches would be great for next year? Does Izzy versus Alex have to be at the top of that list?
It does. It does. And, you know, we were talking about Bejeda a moment ago, and is it one and done as champ? Maybe, maybe not. But before he starts defending against other contenders, assuming Izzy's ready and is in the right mindset and ready physically, I think that's what you got to do first. We got to have number four, right? Between those two, going back to kickboxing and now MMA.
We must do the quadrilogy one more time, the quadrilogy.
Yep, I would agree.
This one is actually set to already happen in May, so I kind of breaking the premise, but Mighty Mouse Mirai's 3, the finishes have been so dramatic in the first two. This has to be another at the top of the list of rematches for this year.
I would agree. I look, absolutely. And look, if you're one, what's a more, is there a more desirable to make for DJ? I kind of don't think so.
Zhang Wei Li, Rose Namajunas 3. I know Rose, the loss, the boring fight. She just got submitted in a grappling match, but it was a grappling match. Zhang Wei Li hasn't been able to get over that hump. Is that the fight that the champion needs?
Yes. Much like with the middleweight title situation and Pajeda and how that theoretically opens up a huge door for Robert Whittaker. Wei Li winning the strawweight title, beating Carla Esparza, opened up that door wide ass open for Rose Namajunas. I think to solidify Wei Li, you've got to have that fight. And it also opens up the possibility, look, set the grappling thing aside. It is what it is. But it opens up the possibility for Rose Namajunas to get the bad taste out of everybody's mouth from the Esparza fight and show how dominant of a fighter she is. So, yeah, you brought up Jones and Ngannou a moment ago, and I'm sure if you asked anybody that they would tell you that's the fight. But the fight might actually be Wei Li and Namajunas again. I think for both those fighters, there's so much there on the line for them that it would be crazy not to make that fight.
Now, these last two, I might be a little perverse, a little sick, a little bit Freddy versus Jason in one of these, a little bit Demolition Man in the other one, lightweight mayhem. And I got to bring up both of these at the same time. We need Gaethje Poirier 2, and we need Chandler Alvarez 3.
I would not complain about either of those. I don't think we get both of them. I think somebody in that mix is going to fight Conor McGregor at some point in 2023. So we'll have to see how all that crap plays out. But yeah, I wouldn't hate on that at all. And by the way, if you tie enough of those guys up, it opens up the door for Beneil Dariush, which was my number one I want to see this year. That man needs a title shot. So yeah, I love what you just threw out.
Yeah, and I just snuck it in there. Eddie Alvarez needs to be re-signed by the UFC to add him to this crop of the last action heroes, have some fun fights and send them all on their way within the next 2 years, but would love to see him back. Now, we wanted to focus on fighters, highlight some fighters, guys on track for bigger things in 2023, guys that have a lot of promise, guys that have grabbed our attention. I kind of made shit lists and throw a whole bunch of names here for all three categories. And I feel like each one almost is like leading into the other. But when I give you these topics, these names, or these categories, who are the first names that came to your mind?
This probably isn't what you were looking for, but hear me out on this. If everything goes according to plan, as far as getting the fight booked, as far as staying out of trouble, 2023 and into 2024 could very well be the year that John Jones solidifies himself as the greatest MMA fighter of all time. Now, depending on what happens, it could lead to more chaos and close getting fights booked and not. And look, with his outside the octagon stuff, who knows what could happen. But if everything falls into place, you get that Ngannou fight, if he can stay out of trouble And he's and he could fight twice at heavyweight this year, including winning the title and then defending it. You might see a lot of forgiveness from fans and pundits towards John Jones for outside the octagon stuff and him solidifying himself, going from the greatest light heavyweight of all time to a dominant heavyweight champ and solidifying that spot as the greatest MMA fighter of all time. I'm sure you were looking for an up-and-comer guy, a breakthrough guy, but think how long it's been since we've seen John in the octagon. In a lot of ways, it almost is a breakthrough again, certainly at a new division. We'll get into this more with some other fighters, I'm sure, but quite honestly, it's 2023 could very well be the year for John Jones, and if it is, I think that's a really good thing for UFC.
John Jones? You give me John Jones? You give me John Bones Jones?
You're not going to like my plan B either. But okay.
Oh, God, that carrot you're dangling in front of. This is what I'm saying. It's like a dragon. I know they exist because they're Komodo dragons, but do I think I'll really ever see one in the wild, flapping its wings, breathing fire? No, that's just a fantasy. Uh-huh. You think we're going to see John Jones in the octagon? And by now, I feel like that's fantasy. And not on John's part, but I personally ran into so many sources that are connected to sources that are people near the situation because we're in town and said he's training hard. He's about to fight. And for some kerfuffle of a reason, they keep falling through. I think we're at about the third expected date that already fell through. That was a sure damn thing for John to make his heavyweight debut. So I understand what you're saying, but I can't just guarantee that I want to put my, that I feel John Jones is really going to have a big 2023. That feels like a fantasy because I thought he was going to have a big 2022.
Well, look, these fights can't keep falling through. And as best we can tell, none of this is John's fault. He was ready to fight Stipe for whatever reason. Stipe was not ready to fight. Ngannou hadn't been healthy. It sure seems like everybody's targeting March 4th for Ngannou Jones. If that doesn't happen, it's disappointing. But at some point in time, it's got to happen. One way or the other. Either you're doing Jones Ngannou, or you're going to bite the bullet and strip Ngannou, or do an interim title fight with Jones and somebody. Look, conversely, this could also be the year Francis Ngannou. Let's say Ngannou is healthy. He agrees to fight John in March and knocks him the fuck out. Then what? Then what are you doing with Ngannou? Because at that point, the world is his oyster. And if you're UFC, you've either got to pony up and pay him or wish him well on his way and start all over at heavyweight. And I could see both things playing out, but I don't think you want to restart at heavyweight. So at that point in time, Francis is probably going to come awful close to getting everything he's wanted from UFC. So look, from that standpoint,
Do you feel that it's already a foregone conclusion that Francis Ngannou's next fight is in the UFC?
Yes, I do. I don't 100% know what the contract deal is. Obviously, there's at least one fight left. I don't know if there's a time limit on that contract. I guess theoretically, he could just sit around for a year or two, whatever, and get out of it that way. But if he does that, based on how long it's already been since we've seen him, how much interest is there in seeing him box? How much interest is there in seeing him going somewhere else? I mean, look, he's Francis Ngannou, for crying out loud. Obviously, there's going to be interest. But yeah, it's behooving of him and the UFC for his next fight to be for the organization. And I can't imagine a scenario where it's not.
See, I thought when we started this conversation that you were simply going to be like, Micah, I already told you my first guy. We already went over this. It's Beneil Dariush.
I'm getting there.
We're just going to go with the layup. I'm going to go all the way to the guys that are already in promise. Because, of course, I got to get out there. See, I started this off, and I'm thinking Ryan Spann, right, as he's heading towards his first main event. I'm thinking Kennedy Enjiku coming off of a main event knockout win. I'm thinking Roman Dolidze, a 3-fight win streak. I'm thinking Shavkat Rakhmonov, who unfortunately we just saw Jeff Neal get injured. So it doesn't appear that Rakhmonov is going to stay on that fight night. But 4-0 and in the rankings, those were the kind of names. These were the kind of breakout guys that, and I want to add, I think Ilya Topuria to that mix of guys that I expect main event or pay-per-view co-main event kind of fights for their next.
No, and fight. Look, I knew that's what you were looking for. And I knew while you might be intrigued by what I threw out there, that I wasn't giving you what you wanted and I'd get some blowback. So I am cool with that. I understand that. Here's my point in bringing up Jones, or depending on how you want to go with that, Ngannou. If there's one thing UFC is missing right now, it is that larger-than-life, dominant SOB that you either love to love or love to hate. And it's a must-watch. Don't get me wrong. There are great fighters out there and fighters that you get really pumped when they're announced for a card. No doubt about that. Say what you want about Conor McGregor. UFC misses Conor McGregor. UFC misses the hell out of John Jones. And if John can hold up his end of the deal as far as staying out of trouble, and you can finally book him in, you know, for the heavyweight title, John Jones is what UFC needs right now. Look, I get it. He's not exactly a spring chicken anymore, but he's not an old man either. I think he could really show his dominance. And again, flip side, anybody who's still questioning Ngannou, anybody who wonders if Ngannou can come back with an injury, he can shut those people up too. And that's why I went with there, because you need both those guys are and can be larger than life characters and be that type of person. We always joke about Conor, and you brought it up earlier. He can fight any damn body, and it's going to be the biggest pay-per-view of the year. You're going to sell out the arena, and you're going to set all kinds of money-making records. Ngannou and Jones can be those guys as well. And look, there's certainly other guys. Hell, there's some younger up-and-comers. Some of the names you just threw out that we could put in that category as well. But I think for Ngannou or Jones, it's just a matter of getting back in there. And in John's case, staying out of trouble. But, and boom, you're right there. And you could be that shot in the arm. And look, I get it. UFC sets profit records every year. They sell more pay-per-views every year. I understand. It's not like they're hurting. It's not like they're starving for a main eventer or a big draw. But you can still use one of those guys. And I think right there, boom, John Jones, Francis Ngannou, one of those guys could carry this promotion through 2023.
So in the show rundown, I sent a bunch of questions over to Michael Carlisle. And the very last one is who could be the biggest draw in MMA? We mean UFC, basically, when we're saying it for the, you know, context of this conversation. And I feel like you molded those three questions I gave you at first in with that last one where you're bringing up Jones and Ngannou and McGregor.
Maybe.
I kind of left them totally out of this conversation because we know that they're known entities. We know how to quantify them. We know where they're at. And I was more thinking about looking towards potential. So if I jump all the way down to that question real quick to get in the mix, where do you feel the UFC is at? Because without Conor McGregor, we don't have a true face of the promotion. And it feels like right now we're swimming. There isn't that one champion that has the magnetism over all the others. Our biggest kind of attractions are O'Malley, Pimblett. Heck, I even wrote down Cyril Gane because of him being able to pull in the entire French audience mattering. Do you see a true face of MMA in the crowd right now, outside of the three guys that we've mentioned?
I don't. Look, that's not to say you asked me that question and the halfway point of 2023 at the end of the year, I might give you a drastically different answer. Could it have been Yuri if not the end for the injury? Maybe. Volkanovski's probably the closest. But no, I think my answer to that would have to be no. That's why I went more with Jones and second, you know, plan B Ngannou. If everything goes the way everybody wants it to go, I think it's going to be one of those guys. Now, the problem there, if it's a Volkanovski, if Jiří hadn't got hurt, you could get three fights, maybe four, if you were really lucky. Let's be honest. So let's say Ngannou Jones fight in March. You're probably only getting one more fight out of him. And again, it'll be a huge fight, but you're probably not getting more than two fights. So is that enough if Conor was healthy and hadn't fallen on hard times inside the octagon the last couple of years and gave you three huge pay-per-views? It might not be quite the same, but it's awful close.
Got to agree with you. Now, as I had a giant list of fighters and I had the ones on track for bigger things, I also had the ones that were kind of breakthrough fighters to me this year. Not our breakthrough fighter of the year winner, but some other breakthrough guys. And I want to know, because I got a list here, so I'm just going to hit you with it. How many of these names stick out to you? Jonathan Pierce, 5-0 so far in the UFC. Anthony Hernandez, a 3-fight win streak. Renat Fakhradinov, 2-0 in the UFC. The dude is on a 16-fight win streak. Adrian Yanez, 9-fight win streak, 5-0 in the UFC, 4 knockouts. Natalie Silva, 8-fight win streak, 2-0 in the UFC. Muhammad Mukhayev, 3-0 in the UFC, 8-0 overall in his young career. Yasmin Haraguy, 10-0, 7 knockouts. Matthew Semelsberger, look at the 3 knockouts he just had against Grant Dawson. Grant Dawson's the next name on my list. It was 3 knockdowns against Jake Matthews. Brendan Allen's been coming on hard. Jonathan Martinez. How does that crop of fighters strike you as people that we could be seeing advance towards the upper portion of fight night cards is what I'm expecting? Because I gave you pay-per-view headliners. Now I'm giving you moving their way up main cards.
Look, all those names intrigue me. Out of those, maybe Brendan Allen the most, because I'm trying to remember all the names. He's probably the one we've seen most in UFC. Here's the problem when you tell me this guy's 3-0 in UFC and on a 16-fight win streak. I don't think most fans care what a fighter did on the regional scene. Now, look, you care to a certain degree because that's how they get noticed in the first place. But in the grand scheme of things, does that 16-fight? And don't get me wrong, it's impressive. I'm not saying it's not. And I'm not saying that he's not worthy, but I'm just saying to the casual fan, do you care more that it's a 16-fight win streak or that they're 3-0 or 5-0 in UFC? I think you care about the UFC part a whole lot more. Look, all those guys are intriguing, and I understand that you're putting those in a different level than what we were just talking about. You're not talking about how many of those guys are going to be main eventing pay-per-views by September, October, November, December. So all those names intrigue me, but I don't know if they intrigue the masses as much as they intrigue me, and certainly not as much as they intrigue someone like you who, you know, spends way too much time watching every regional promotion on Fight Pass known to man. And look, and I'm not crapping on that, don't get me wrong, but please don't take it that way. But I'm just saying, I don't think most UFC fans digest MMA that way.
I'm thinking that of that list I gave you, Matthew Semelsberger, big power, the 3 knockdowns against Jake Matthews, he could translate into a fan favorite and somebody that the fans are going to want to see, somebody that will have a long tenure in the UFC. Jonathan Martinez, we just saw him take out Cub Swanson. He's somebody I'm feeling like is on the cusp there, maybe. 135. Adrian Yanez, he's going to be fighting Rob Font. If he can improve his defensive responsibility just a little bit, his offense is so ferocious. And Jonathan Martinez, he is a tenacious grappler and a willing striker. So those were the 4 people that right away in my list I was focusing on. I'm like, they have the potential to make some waves this year. And as I mentioned, the 2 young ladies, Haraguy and Silva, I'm happy to see a youth infusion at strawweight. It kind of felt like, well, that was the marquee division for a while. We've kind of had this stagnant point of adding youth, where it seemed like you were continually getting prospects into that division. I'm happy to see new ones.
Let me back up 1 second. As far as face of the promotion, biggest draw and all that, neither one of us mentioned Brandon Moreno. Now, he's got to go out and take care of business and beat Figueiredo. But why not a guy like Brandon Moreno? Do we not bring him up because he's a flyweight? And maybe there's a ceiling on flyweight. So we saw that with Mighty Mouse. Because I think Brandon Moreno has everything you want from being that type of draw. Not just here in the U.S., but around the world. Why aren't we giving Brandon Moreno more love?
Because I question where Brandon Moreno is at as a fighter, because he's had so many massive changes happen to his life in the last couple weeks. He is one of the fighters that we can't help but mention. He moved his entire camp from where he was living in Mexico, in Tijuana, leaving the team he had been with his whole career, to go to Missouri, to go to Glory MMA, to go to James Krause, who was specifically getting credited for major improvements that we saw in Moreno's last fight. It was James Krause. And people were saying it's only going to get better as this relationship prolongs and progresses.
And that relationship might be over now. Yeah.
Appears to have dissolved, and Moreno is back training at the PI in Las Vegas randomly. We don't know what kind of detriment, what kind of cross messaging he's getting. There is so much going on that I feel like there's just a giant question mark over who is Brandon Moreno as a fighter and what is he going to bring into the next Figueiredo fight. Will he be able to make the proper adjustments, because he had already left his team, made the commitment that he needed to adjust himself? Do you just turn around and go back to the old time? Has he grabbed new coaches? Is that going to be now a third straight camp with a different team around him? There's so many questions to be answered about Moreno. That's why I kind of left him off.
No, and look, that's certainly fair. How's the Krause situation going to affect him? I that's more than fair to ask. But if things go his way inside the octagon, I think his personality, the way fans around the world look at him, I think he is that guy that could be one of, anyway, the faces of the company in 2023 and going forward. Again, a lot's got to work out, but I think we could say that for any name we've thrown out as far as that goes.
Two more people I want to throw out. You, yeah. Marlon Vera and Aaron Blanchfield. What would you feel about them adding to that face thing? Because I'll tell you, Aaron Blanchfield feeding off the hate in her backyard in New York, taking care of Molly McCann, dusting the dirt off her shoulder, some stone cold personality that felt authentic. Go back to some of the most successful fighters that we've had. It's because the personality is authentic and not forced, and sometimes that translates in a different manner. And I think Aaron Blanchfield is on the cusp.
I'd probably go with her over Vera. I think we are at a big transition point in women's MMA right now. How much longer is Amanda Nunes going to be around? Is she still around in 2 years? I kind of doubt it. Valentina Shevchenko has been incredibly dominant till her last fight. Now, was that an off night, or is that a sign that while she maybe isn't going away, isn't going to be quite as dominant as she has been? I think we all think Wei Li has all the tools to be a dominant fighter on the women's side of things, if she can get past Rose Namajunas finally. So point being, I think over the next year or two, there's a huge opportunity, not just for an Aaron Blanchfield, but for a lot of very good women in the UFC to step up and really solidify themselves. You know, for a while there, it seemed like you had three fighters that really just had a stranglehold on all of women's UFC. I think there's a lot of openings now, and I think someone like a Blanchfield has the talent, has the ability, that can go out and set herself apart from a lot of those other fighters. And as a Shevchenko starts to transition to another stage of a career, as a Nunez starts to go away, you need a face for the women's side of things, and a fighter like Blanchfield could be that person.
You know, really, Ryan, I'm just totally off topic. We know that fighters have a multitude of interests, and I came across an interest that I was quite surprised to see. Valentina's sister, Antonina, yeah. She's a pilot, dude.
Yeah. How crazy is that?
I'm like, wow, I've heard of dancers. You just never thought, you know, oh, what's she doing when she's not punching and kicking people? Oh, she's flying the plane commercial airlines. I'm like, oh, okay. Little tidbit there. Didn't know if everybody knew that one. Also want to throw out Alexa Grasso. As we're looking towards the flyweight division, we're seeing a couple real budding challengers develop. I feel like Alexa Grasso's game has taken a huge stride as well this year.
I would agree with you. I've always liked Grasso. Is it a little late in the game where she's only 29? Yeah, maybe. I think the women's division, again, I don't want to make it sound like it's falling apart. It's no good, because I'm not saying that at all, but I am saying that I think it's ripe for some new blood. And there are a few fighters out there that are in a position to really step up and take hold of the reins and take the women's side of things to the next level. And yeah, why not throw Alexa Grasso in there? Anything else you want to hit me with, Micah? You already shit all over my John Jones, Francis Ngannou thing. You want to beat up on me some more?
Okay. One last question. I realize I had.
Okay.
Do you see a division or a weight class specifically that is getting more intriguing to you in the new year?
I do. This may surprise you because of my love for the big plotting heavyweights. It's the flyweight division and the bantamweight division. I think both of those, you've got a lot of fun fighters there. You're going to hold me to the fire and make me pick one or the other? I'd probably go the flyweight division.
How can you keep stealing my answers? I don't even understand how this is possible. Get out of my head. I thought I had you with a Muhammad Mukayev, with an Amir Albazi, with a Matthias Nicolau. These guys that I watch. I didn't think they were paying attention to 125. Well, I know we got the quadrilogy, but you got those young guys on the rise where we've known from 35 to 70, it's the deepest waters in MMA. I feel like 25 is going to get a lot of respect in the new year.
I would agree with you on that. Micah, tell everybody how they can keep up with you.
Well, the website is cageminds.com. All the news that we've been talking about, it's all up on the website. Keep up with us on social media. That's Cage Minds Combat Sports News on Facebook, at cageminds_CSN on Instagram, at Cage Minds MMA on Twitter, and it's Cage Minds MMA Show on YouTube.
Find the show on Twitter at MMA After Hours. You can get me at Real Mike Carlisle. Hell, you can email us MMAAfterHours@gmail.com. We will talk to you next week for another episode of MMA After Hours here on the After Hours Podcast Network.
Love combat sports? I have a website for you, cageminds.com. That's CAGEDMINDS.com. Fight news from around the world, in-depth interviews, live event coverage. Covering combat sports for over a decade. Established in April 2011. That's cageminds.com.